Welcome to another episode of Rooted Wisdom. In this episode, we're live at the 11th Annual Native American Youth in Agriculture Leadership Summit, hosted at the University of Arkansas. This powerful gathering brings together Native American, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiian youth ages 18 to 24 from across Indian Country. For one transformative week, these young leaders immerse themselves in specialized tracks, collaborate on capstone projects, learn from industry professionals, go on tours of tribal farms, and learn to cook with indigenous ingredients, all with the goal of growing their potential in agriculture. With our special correspondent, Art, we will hear from the participants, track leaders, speakers, and other guests during the summit.
Arthur Chojefkados. Hello, my name is Arthur. I'm the editor for Rooted Wisdom. This episode is a collage of recordings from throughout our 2025 Youth Summit. This was a very packed week, so we'll start our audio journey with an overview of some of these moments. There were three big trips this week. The first trip was exclusive to the Animal Science track, which is one of five of our class groups at the summit. The Animal Science track got to visit the University of Arkansas's Agricultural Research and Extension Center to learn about parasites, handle sheep, and watch an ultrasound on a cannulated cow.
So, when Maggie was about a yearling, our veterinarian put her to sleep, and then he made an incision through the skin, and then he separated the muscle tissue, and he made an incision through the rumen. And he sewed the rumen and the skin together, and he created a hole. So we could do research on her. This plastic part, or rubber part, is actually not attached to her at all. It's just sitting in that hole. It's kind of like, I always tell people, it's kind of like those gauge things that people put in their ears. It just holds that hole open. And then you guys saw me take the plug out. There's a lot of veterinary schools that have cannulated cows for teaching, but another great thing that they do with them at veterinary schools is you can take a sample of this green liquidy gunk out of a cannulate and put it in a cow that's been sick and help to re-inoculate them with healthy microorganisms. We know a lot about the bugs that live in their guts. We don't know everything. And so there's a lot going on there that you're better off, rather than trying to just reproduce that healthy microbiome, you can just steal microbiome from a healthy one and give it to a sick one.
We had a few students describe their experiences with this trip.
So yat e shik e doshine, she e nishan lata da shichine, ye din e nishlingo, tenshikin e boshichin, tode jine chiche, do lukatane da shanela. So what I said was, I am the Shawnee Laughter. I am Red Running into the Water Clan and Giant People Clan. My second clan is Honeycomb Rock People Clan. My third clan is Bitterwater. And my last clan is Red People Clan. And I am a woman from the Diné tribe, the Navajo tribe.
The hole in the rumen stomach so that you can access its bacteria. Yeah. We'll just call it that.
Yeah, so. I really enjoyed that. Like, at first, like, my friends, they were like, it's going to smell bad and everything. It didn't really smell bad to me because I butcher a lot. So it didn't smell that bad to me, but it was, like, pretty interesting. And when I was feeling it, when I put my hand in, it felt like the inside of a sheep's stomach, which is, like bumpy and has, like, ridges and, like poking out a little bit. And that was really interesting. I tried feeling for the ribs, but I guess it was, like, only one accessible way to, like, so, like,
she was very full of grass.
Yeah, she was very full, and I couldn't really move my arm around that much. But it was really interesting. I really liked that.
Our big field trip this year was to the Muscogee Nation to visit their Loop Square Meat Co., their food distribution center, the College of the Muscogee Nation, and finally their eco park, where they are working on regenerating native plant ecosystems. So we have a couple of snippets from across that trip here.
What breed of cattle do you have?
So our females are all commercial, which means they're not registered. All of our bulls are registered Angus or Red Angus. They are top 4% in the breed for marbling and carcass merit. Prior to that, when we were just a cow-calf operation, we ran a lot of Charolais calves. We ran a lot of Brangus because they do really well in this area. Problem with that is when we shifted to putting meat on the shelves, they don't marble. and they or they don't marble as quickly. They don't marble quick enough to get USDA choice prime. So we had to kind of switch our entire genetic makeup and go to red Angus and Angus, primarily Angus and red Angus. The only other breeds that really will marble in the same way, there's a breed called Bronvi, which most people think of as a dairy type breed, but they will marble really well, somewhere between 75 and 80% choice, which is really, really good for the beef industry on a whole. So we could infuse Bronvi whenever we get to that point.
You said like 150 a week come through?
No, our capacity is 150 weeks. So when you see the big cooler in there and you're kind of trying to picture like how many would this hold, it's supposed to hold about 150 heads. It would hold 150 head worth of beef in there.
Okay.
We're killing somewhere between 30 and 50 a week, depending on the week here. If I had my druthers, we'd stay around 40 head a week. When you start doing too many more than that, not that we can't do it, but it is very time consuming to do individual cuts of animals. It's very time consuming to work with, you know, to fill up 20 head with 7 different or 8 different or 9 different producers. They're never on time. You know, variety. We've all probably been involved. You get a flat, calf gets out, you get stuck in traffic. A variety of reasons, the less farmer to farmer sort of interactions you have on a particular day, the better, in terms of like, hey, if you can bring me 5, for sure I can slot you in Monday. If you're bringing me 1, we'll see how the week fills up and then we'll call you.
So for anyone who didn't know, last year we actually had sort of a crisis with the Fidipper warehouses. There was a really big issue with the distributor that USDA provides. So I was just gonna ask you guys how you guys got through that.
So we were one of the more fortunate ones. We weren't ever completely out of anything where they had to close. Some sites did have to close because they were not receiving their trucks. We never did get to that point. And then luckily USDA did come in and they gave us additional funds. The first time they'd ever done this in the 16 years I've been here, they gave us funds that we could go out and purchase foods to fill in our shelves. And with us having Loop Square, it was a very easy process. So the first time ever we bought turkeys for Thanksgiving, they always do hams, but USDA's never done a turkey. We did turkeys for the summer, we did lunch meats, we did like bratwurst, things that would be easy for the kids to make while they were out of school. We did like in the winter months, we did like ham hocks, things to make stews and stuff with. So it worked out really good. So we weren't as affected as much as some of the other tribes were.
OSU IT to become a college. And so what it shows you is through planning and through people having a vision for something and being steadfast in their belief that you can make something happen, they've asked you to produce all this. So for 40 acres, we've got, 6 buildings, dorms, they have the entire master plan. This shows you a prime example. If you stick to a plan and carry it out, and you don't get involved in a lot of infighting and politics amongst yourselves, you can make something happen. We have about 250 students now at the College of Muskogee Nation. And 2 years ago, we started the extension program. And does anybody know why we have an extension program? Does anybody know what extension is? Anybody have heard of extension? It was 1862 that passed the Morrill Act and created what's called the land grant institutions. So you're from Connecticut, right?
Yep.
What's the land grant institution in Connecticut?
UConn.
UConn.
Yep.
So here, does anybody know what the land grant institution in Oklahoma is, the main one?
Oklahoma State,
right? So they do basic education, which is training the students. They do research, which is developing, obviously, things and evolving technologies and research. And they also do extension. That's getting that research and education out into the communities. So if you look, if you think back around the Dust Bowl area in the 1920s, they're tilling up the entire western part of Oklahoma, in Texas, New Mexico. You have a huge amount of dirt that's flying all the way to D.C. and they're like, okay, we got to do something about educating people from an ag standpoint. And that's when you start seeing things like the Soil Conservation Service, which is NRCS now. And that's getting that education out into the communities, that they do things the right way.
We're sitting in the office scraping individual seeds and putting them in buckets to set out.
Yeah.
What I will say is even the places that I put flowers that didn't produce like what I thought they would, the native plants that came back, when you drive around it, if you don't know what you're looking for, you'll miss it. If you do know what you're looking for native species-wise, you can see my strips. I mean, it's amazing. I had a bunch of that coreopsis come back where I got rid of the fescue and the Bermuda, and I had other black-eyed Susans that I didn't even plant come up. I've got a few milkweeds that fight their way through all this stuff. Milkweeds is really what the key is for me out here. That's what I want to see a lot more of. I'm big on the monarchs. We work with UC Butterfly Farm, which they're amazing. They've helped us a ton. They put us, you know, us and them were in Nat Geo 2 Januaries ago, doing habitat restoration specifically for monarchs out here.
And our final activity of the week before student capstone presentations was led by Chef Denisa Livingston and Chef Mackie Bancroft, who instructed the students on preparing an incredible meal centered around indigenous foodways. This audio is coming from an industrial-grade kitchen at the Arkansas Food Innovation Center, so pardon the noise.
Over there, and then we also have featuring the Sika olive oil, which is here on this table from Northern California, and then we're also making a tortilla salad, which is a watermelon salad with manumin, which is wild rice from Minnesota, some puffed amaranth, and then also pepitas, and then some prickly pear New Mexico prickly pear packets. So you guys will finish that up. And then we're also making some biscuits, and that's going to be with the Ute Mountain Blue Corn, which is Mackie's tribe, and then also with the wild choke cherry, and then white Sonoran wheat flour, which is Los Poblanos wheat. It's a heritage wheat with puff quinoa on that side. And then your colleagues, they made a fire-roasted warrior's tea, the black tea, caffeinated. It's the only plant species of caffeinated tea in the U.S., so that's native to the U.S. So we have the black tea over there. We have the mint tea. That's Yupon from Florida. And then the Iowa honey, which is from Iowa. And then we have some special pairings that we'll have with hawthorn jelly, which is for the biscuits. And then also we have Navajo Mike Monster Venom hot sauce. So I don't know how hot that's going to be, but we have that. And then Los Poblanos Salsa Verde that we have. So that's the menu. You guys can look at that here. So if those of you that are interested in like doing the sauteing with the veggies and the meat, you come over here with that.
We also have a brief interview with Tiffany and Teresa from Oklahoma Tribal Engagement Partners about their experiences teaching the health and nutrition track this year.
Hi, I'm Teresa Jackson, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist with Oklahoma Tribal Engagement Partners. I serve as the Tribal Partnership and Outcomes Partner. I am Mojave, Seminole Creek, Cherokee, and Yuma.
Hi, I'm Tiffany Grant. I'm also a registered dietitian nutritionist with Oklahoma Tribal Engagement Partners. I am our project dietitian and also social media partner. I think one of the things that's been exciting about this group is all of the questions and the discussions that we have nutrition topics. I know that's not everyone's interest or field, but they have had a big interest in the topics that we've shared this week. And so much so that we've gotten off track a little bit with our agenda because they've had so many good discussions. So it's been fun to watch them, especially with FDPIR when we visited yesterday, and getting to see, we did a program overview, but getting to see it in person and getting to see the foods and hear about the program and learn more about that. I think that was a peak highlight for some of our students here.
And I really like how all of the different field trips have kind of tied in. And with our capstone projects, we've asked them to be nutrition or health educators in their community and create, you know, a mini lesson or a recipe or something that they would want to share as an educator in their community, and just hearing what they're working on. They are definitely incorporating traditional foods and taking into account cultural differences and the needs of our population and how they could make what folks have access to more nutritious overall. So I've really appreciated kind of how they're tying it all together, which is the whole point. So I really, really like that.
And yesterday was fun because we did a Chopped with FDPIR.
Yeah.
And no, not yesterday, the day before. Monday we did a Chopped with FDPIR Foods, and they got to create their own recipes with the mystery items that we gave them and then our small pantry that they had access to. And it, I think, was also a really good way for them to incorporate different food groups and learn how to do that. You know, we talk about it, but actually putting it into use and doing that and making sure that they had multiple food groups, and then they were also using some, like I said, of the Fidipper foods, and knowing and learning and seeing how it doesn't have to be difficult. It's not rocket science, but also showing them that they can also teach others how to easily do this and easily incorporate foods and make it to where you're not eating the same things over and over. You can kind of experiment and get creative. And I think they did that. They seemed to really enjoy it, and both groups did really well creating the recipes and working together as a team. So that was fun to see too.
For sure. And in addition to that nutrition piece, because that's what we do as registered dietitians, we felt it was important to also try and tie in some movement. So we were so excited that we got to bring in Autumn Only Achieve. She's Pawnee. She was a former student leader for this summit. I think back in 2017 was the year we decided on. And she is a doctor of physical therapy now. And so she got to share and talk about her journey and lots of different programs that are available to students in college age. And then encourage them, and they were also very engaged and had really good questions for her, so I appreciated that as well. So not just focusing on the nutrition piece, but also trying to tie in some of that movement as well.
A follow-up question to Chopped: what was the recipes they ended up?
One group did a stir fry, so their mystery items was canned chicken.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Soy sauce and a can of peaches. And so they did a stir fry where they added spinach from the pantry and made kind of like a peach soy sauce for their chicken and spinach. And then they also grabbed a wild rice blend from the pantry and served it with wild rice. And then as a side, because that one really incorporated enough food groups for the competition, but as a side, they served yogurt with the rest of the remaining peaches. And I think they put cinnamon on top. Mm-hmm. And then the other group did a pinwheel, and their mystery bag ingredients, they had
canned peaches
was in both of them. Mm-hmm. And then what
cream
was
cheese.
Their cream cheese, and they had a, oh, and turkey deli meat, because that's a newer item for FDPIR. So we have been experimenting with it ourselves. It's just like coming up with recipes other than just sandwiches. Right. But they did a pinwheel, so it had they used spinach and cream cheese and made a spread. And then they made a peach sauce with their canned peaches and every probably seasoning we had up there. They were limited to 7 ingredients total, because we also know that we don't want a recipe that has 10, 15 ingredients in it. But they put the turkey, the cream cheese spread with spinach in the tortilla, rolled it up, and then they had their peach sauce to dip it in. So they also toasted it. So they rolled it up, put a little olive oil with seasonings on that, and toasted it up, sliced it, and served it with peach sauce. So lots of creativity. Also had to be under 30 minutes too. They did a really good job.
No, that's exciting.
Yeah.
They were both delicious.
They were, yeah.
Everyone got to try and critique and what would we do different. I think that's another thing that we try to point out with each activity we do, especially if they're hands-on. So like you mentioned earlier, showing not just receiving that education, but then how could they actually do that education, and talking about what changes would you make if you were to do this at home? What could you incorporate or highlight that's more specific to your area, your region? Since we know, you know, especially with traditional foods, it differs so much depending on where we are located.
And finally, we have just a few more moments and interviews with students about their time at the Youth Summit this year. There were a lot of very engaged and passionate students who were willing to give their time to, you know, be interviewed. So that was really nice.
All right, my name is Sebastian April. I'm from Waterbury, Connecticut, and I'm currently a plant science major and cannabis cultivation minor at the University of Connecticut. I'm from Waterbury, and my father is from Central Mexico, and my mother is Mi'kmaq. I'm from Aroostook County, Maine. Yeah, so my track is currently land stewardship and land conservation. As of right now, I'm feeling really good about it. So far, we've been working on a kind of regenerative farm on, I believe, 50 to 100 acres plot of land. We're splitting it up for a couple of different tribes within the area for communal-based stuff, and as well as just getting other crops to either feed communities and or, you know, fix up the land. One thing that, again, we have 50 to 100 acres that we're going to be working with, but some of that land is just a bit polluted just because of some of the things that have happened on it before. So I think what we're trying to do is, again, restore it to a degree and, you know, make it sustainable. So I felt like one thing that was really cool that I could at least take from the track that I've been working on is incorporating, you know, regenerative ag and fixing the land. So one thing that I took, or that I was planning to do, was to go to Aroostook County even this summer and plant hemp for phytoremediation to get rid of PFAS in soil. So one thing that was cool that I could have incorporated, even though that I'm not unfortunately going this summer anymore, but we're going to be incorporating hemp onto the regenerative farm here a little bit, and that's one part that I'm working on that I'm honestly really happy to incorporate, because not only maybe next summer do I get to go and plant, but I'm able to take some of the stuff here and bring it back to the community back in Maine. So I find that that's really helpful, and it's been a great experience so far.
That's good. And like the way that you can incorporate, you can suggest like, okay, this is something I want to do, and you get that kind of feedback from this project.
Exactly, to bring back there. So it's kind of just really building on what I already know. And again, you know, incorporate things like, you know, Indian mustard that help with PFAS and other types of plants that are just really good for keeping that soil healthy. Can't really say too much else. I've honestly just really enjoyed my time here and made a lot of good connections that I really see myself, you know, reaching out to a lot of the people that I've met here for, you know, other info, other feedback, things that they're doing within their communities. Mm-hmm. So I've had a great time here, honestly.
I'm Samantha Morris. I'm a member of the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Tribe of Indians out of Southern Oregon, and I am in the animal science track. This week's been amazing. I think I've been learning a lot of things that I haven't really gotten the opportunity to learn in other settings. It's been great to learn in an environment with other Native youth from all over. I find it really valuable to be able to pull from other people's tribes, like, oh, we do this here, we do this somewhere else. I feel like agriculture is something that a lot of tribal youth don't really get the opportunity to talk about. There's a lot of other conferences or groups for this, but agriculture isn't something that's really touched on. So it's really interesting to me to see how other tribes are tackling food sovereignty and all the different avenues for that. Mm-hmm. For the animal science track, though, we've been doing a lot learning how specifically sheep and other ruminants are with parasites and like keeping them healthy. Our track this year is to our capstone project. There's two teams. We have sheep and goats, and I'm on the sheep team. We have to make a treatment plan for sheep being dewormed. We have their vital signs, and we had to figure out what kind of parasite they had. And now we're creating a vaccination schedule for our sheep and the rest of the flock. And then also being able to go to the University of Arkansas's Agricultural Center and meet with their animals. We got to see the cow with the hole in it. I can't remember what it's called right now.
It was the
rumen hole.
Right.
We got to see a cow with a hole in it and stick our hand in her, which was really cool. And then we got to handle some sheep in real life, see how you would actually check a FOMACHA score. Those sheep look great. And now we're determining how the best way is to convey the information we've been absorbing over the past week to the rest of the conference, which is really cool. Gets to touch on public speaking, being able to work in a group that you've only known for a week and create a presentation with them and work to our other skills has been kind of interesting to do. It's like speed track group project.
How did you feel about the parasites?
Oh, those were gross. Also, you weren't up front, but if you were in the front, you could smell the solution that they were in. And like when he specifically pulled out, it was a type of fly larva that
fly.
Yeah, how some of them like sit in the stomach lining. When he pulled it out of the solution that it was sitting in, it was gross. Like smelled pungent. Like, I'm sitting in the front, having to cover my nose discreetly not to offend the parasitic professor. oh, gosh. Those were interesting. My expectation for this conference was, I don't know if we're going to talk about, like, agricultural animals or, like, wildlife conservation animals. It was interesting that my expectations were subverted. Learning about the parasites was cool. We got to hold. I didn't touch it. There was a giant worm everyone got to hold.
A tapeworm.
I never want to see one of those again. And then being able to go and like see how they actually handle their animals was cool too. Yeah, I got more locked in with the cow and when they did the ultrasound on her because she was pregnant, I did not realize that they go through the booty to get to that baby. That's crazy. And then how they were talking about if the baby drops, they can't get a visual on it. Mm-hmm. So they honestly have no idea what they're going to get when it comes out. They don't know if it's a boy or a girl. It's just like
very interesting
because you can't get to him. So you're like, right. I didn't realize there was so much guesswork in like that sphere of agriculture. Like you don't really know what's going to happen.
Right. Is there anything you would say for future students, recommendations, or just, like, what they should prepare for?
For the conference?
For the summit, like, yeah.
Yeah, be prepared for a lot of walking. We've been walking a lot. I think, like, yeah, just come with, you have preconceptions of what your tribe does, and just be open to the information from other places. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a masterclass on taking notes, I think, note-taking. We do a lot of that. You're meeting people from all over the country, so there's so many different ways people do things. And just have that mindset of, I'm going to learn this, and then I'm going to take it back home and utilize that in my development, in the development of my tribe. I hope I'm able to tell them, like, hey, guys, they're doing this over here. We should start doing this.
Exactly.
Just open conversations, I think, is a good thing about this conference, is that I'm able to talk to people from all over and learn new ways that things happen.
My name is Azalea Harvilio. I come from the Napa Nation in northern Arizona, from Kianta, Arizona, and I am in the animal science track. I honestly love interacting with other Native American students who have the same passion to continue on with the dying art, and the idea that we all are coming together and grouping, and we're explaining how we want to take care of this and how we want to make it grow is like the awesome thing about this conference. Not only that, interacting with other people who basically are working in the actual field, are actually like putting in the whole works and making it alive. And, you know, them talking to us, saying like, oh, this is what we think, this is what's going on. And honestly, the whole big word that everybody's been saying this whole week, food sovereignty. Like, to be sovereign, having to feed your nation in order to be independent is like the main focus of this whole thing. But that's basically what we've been talking about and what I've reflected most of the week. But yet, you know, the whole connections, absolutely.
What would you recommend for folks also interested in agriculture, interested in the summit? Do you have any just comments on that?
I would say go for it, because I didn't think I would get this. But also, if you are one of the students who basically feel like, I don't want to be on the reservation no more, I don't want to be, you know, here, I want to be in the city, I would say get your education, get whatever you need, the knowledge, the wisdom that those people are willing to give you, and come back and help your community, because your community needs you. We need you. And that's all I gotta say.
As we wrap up this episode of Rooted Wisdom, we celebrate the legacy and future of the Youth in Agriculture Leadership Summit. From its beginnings in 2014 to today's dynamic programming, the summit has remained rooted in its mission to educate and connect Native youth with the tools and knowledge they need to thrive in agriculture. To learn more about the summit and other youth opportunities, visit indigenousfoodandag.com/youth-programs. If you'd like to help us support the next generation of Native youth in agriculture, go to our website and donate. Thanks for listening, and stay rooted in wisdom.